Napa know-how.
Napa guy knows not to judge a man by his car's multicolored paint job or absence of modern gadgetry. Who cares if it's technically old enough to vote and the windows are powered by the strength of your left arm? Your monthly payment is zero, and it'll stay that way. Because with over 500,000 parts and a little Napa know-how, you can keep anything on the road. She may not be pretty, but she's all yours. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
Here comes Westbrook, front court, Fortitude down to three. He'll jump it. It's up and good. Timeout.
Go. You guys good?
Yeah, as long as there's some badass intro music or something, we're good to go.
Yeah, no. Well, I mean, have you listened to my show? Have you ever heard of All Money Ball and NBA show?
Yeah, I have before we were joining, just a little bit though, not like too extensively.
That's not what you're supposed to say, man. You're supposed to say...
I'm an honest guy. What can I say?
Well, I really like my intro music. I hope the listener liked it because they just listened to it because we're now on another episode of All Money Ball and NBA Show, and I'm introducing formally on the microphone for the first time ever for your listening ears, unless you've already listened to their podcast, the Thunderheads. So go ahead, guys, introduce yourself. You know, say Twitter handles if that's what you want to say, and then we can get the show on the road. Talk about the OKC Thunder.
Well, I'm Brandon. I'm the host of Thunderheads. You can follow us at OKC Thunderheads, and I'm joined by Rob Larson, as always, in the dark and stormy Jason Lewis. We all kind of run the Thunderheads Twitter, so you can find us there.
Okay, well, that's awesome. So, did you guys catch the game last night?
Well, of course we did.
That was incredible.
Yeah, it was an awesome game. I think it was one of those that we knew it was a good opportunity for the Thunder to pull out a good win against a team that was, I mean, Jazz had won six straight. And just the game itself was incredible to watch. Obviously, we have a rooting interest, so, you know, we're pulling for the Thunder. And they needed that win. They had like a little four-day break. And just to pull that off in the fashion that they did was nice.
Yeah, were you guys worried about that not working out? Because I got to be perfectly honest, from the outside looking in, I did not expect the Thunder to win.
Yeah, I think there was a little bit of, we were a little torn here. We do predictions for a week, a stretch of games. And I think two of us went 3-1 over a four-game stretch, which would end with the Cleveland game. And Jason went 2-2, but...
But I also wasn't sure that Adams was going to play last night.
Yeah, that was a big wild card there. The fact that Adams was there really helped with Gobert.
Well, I think you worry about that match. If Adams doesn't play and you have to deal with Gobert with Cantor instead of Adams, I mean, that's just not good. Plus, Cantor gets booed every minute he's on the court in Utah.
Yeah.
Well, he went ham last time because I thought that was going to be an X factor because the last time you guys played the Jazz, Cantor was just going off.
I don't know if I remember.
I think he went 8-9.
Okay, well, I mean, the last time the Thunder played the Jazz this year was a huge blowout, though. I mean, it was also in Utah.
Oh, yeah, we got him.
And I believe it was on the second night of a back-to-back after the Thunder got blown out.
Yeah, the last time they played at OKC, or the last time I watched anyways. But I was watching the game last night really intently. One of the things that I thought was a takeaway, or maybe the main takeaway, is that it's been pretty crazy to see Russell Westbrook consistently hit clutch jump shots and just actually pull up mid-range jump shots that he really has never made at a consistent rate in his career. But, I mean, the reason why you guys have such a high standing in the West and the reason why you guys have been able to sort of stay in the running as, you know, a real playoff team, not sort of a fringe one, is because Russ has just made this huge improvement in terms of his clutch play. I mean, what do you guys think? What do you point at there? Like, what do you say, okay, this is what he's doing better?
Well, I think a huge part of it is that he hasn't really had those clutch opportunities in the past because KD was always that guy. So now you're just getting a huge volume of them.
Well,
and he's doing a great job of actually coming through on them.
And there's no doubt the dude, I mean, has swagger for days. Yeah. You know, he's confidence for days. He's not scared of the moment at all. I mean, he goes into that at one point in the fourth quarter, he missed his last 13 shots. And so right then I'm thinking, okay, he's about to get hot. I mean, because he's so streaky when he shoots the ball anyways. When he misses 13 in a row, you know he's not going to miss his next five. I mean, he's got some in the tank. And I felt good about the way he was going to close last night. I think I even tweeted out a little prediction. I was like, okay, here they come. You can't miss 13 in a row and just get away with it. He's about to shoot some fireballs, as I like to call them.
Yeah, no, and I mean, you guys getting the W there was not, to me, something that was absolutely... Well, I mean, you guys too, you know, there was like 10 seconds left. Gordon Hayward hits that three off of a curl. It was really, really fantastic play, but then Russell Westbrook takes it down, and Steven Adams sets a high pick and roll and sets one of the best moving screens I've ever seen. Now, don't get me wrong. You don't call that moving screen.
It was highly illegal, but the last 2 minutes before it didn't say anything about it.
Yeah, it didn't. That's a good point, Jason. I mean, it's kind of, you got to give Donovan some credit there too, because the Thunder, they had a lapse on defense. I mean, that was way too easy of a three for Gordon Hayward.
Yeah.
You know, Russ actually got off the hook. He got himself off the hook by hitting that last shot because he was nowhere on defense on that last possession. But Donovan, when he takes the timeout after Hayward hits that three, he elects to take the ball out of bounds under the goal rather than advance the ball, which is great for Russ because he gets a head of steam going down the court. And he's almost impossible to guard in that situation. And the Jazz were trying to bait him into that three. Is that what you thought, Rob? Like, did you think they were baiting him into that three?
Yeah, kind of. It was really weird just to see that they gave him...
Are you talking about on the very last possession of the game?
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Did he take a three? I thought he took a pull.
No, he took a two, but they were trying to bait him into taking the three.
Oh, okay.
Because we didn't need one.
Well, and he loves that three.
Yeah, that's
okay, well, yeah. And you know, to be perfectly honest, I've seen too many times this season teams try to bait Russell Westbrook into taking shots that they think honestly, it's good strategy on other teams' part, because I'm telling you guys, he's missed those in the past. Like, he has done that consistently, but this year he's just been on a different level. Like, he has just always hit the clutch shot. I mean, it's pretty incredible. It's got to be amazing to watch.
Yeah, and they've been in a lot of close games this year with, you know, losing KD, not getting anything from him. They've been in, I think of their 46, I think we saw a stat, they've been in like 27 or so.
25, 26 close games. Like, that fall into the clutch category.
And yeah, he's been great. It's really nice because I don't know sort of before the season started that we would have thought he would have been just incredible this season.
Well, I don't think that anyone has ever identified Russ as a clutch player per se. Yeah. But this year, I mean, Chris is right. He's been so clutch.
Yeah, well, that's sort of the point I'm trying to make, is that I thought this Thunder team, and this is something I've discussed with some other people. I've never talked to you guys personally, but going into the season, I thought that the Thunder were just going to completely implode. I mean, I give huge credit. First of all, Billy Donovan is a great coach, because that's the lens I'm looking at. I looked at y'all's roster. speaking of OKC, I'm from Texas, so I say y'all. So, you know, that's good.
Better than Yuns.
Yeah.
They say Yuns in the Northeast, like in the Hillbilly Nation.
Wow. We don't tolerate that on this network. So, I looked at the Thunder roster and I'm thinking, okay, if I was a coach, what would I do? And generally I can make predictions that are correct, because I'll think about the system that they run to optimize the players and be like, okay, this is just not going to work. And when coaches are really good, it's when they think of stuff and they can execute a scheme that I just didn't think of. That's my litmus test for a really good coach. And Scott Brooks has done a fantastic job, because if I was coaching the Thunder, you guys would be bad.
Billy Donovan.
Billy Donovan. Yeah, no, Donovan really has. I mean, he's not getting his due credit. I mean, you look at a team that has Russell Westbrook on it, and they're not going to give his coach any credit. And they're, you know, I mean, right. It's kind of how it works.
Well, you think about the situation he came into, where he had Kevin Durant here, and then 1 year later, it's just completely changed. I mean, this team was built around two All-Stars. That's how, you know, that's how the roster was constructed.
Right.
And then now we're looking at one of them just goes away, and he has to figure it out with these pieces.
And you're talking about not only that, but the third youngest team in the NBA.
Right. And the way it's constructed is mostly D
defense around those two all-stars.
Yeah, no shooting, all defense, all athleticism, so, and Russell Westbrook.
Russ just has to do almost everything by himself.
Well, so one of the things that I really like about what you know, it's interesting because Scott Brooks, the former coach of the Thunder, he went over to the Wizards and replaced Randy Whitman, but now Billy Donovan is actually using something that Randy Whitman, who Scott replaced, what Randy Whitman used to do is use Nene and Marcin Gortat to box out and then just allow John Wall to get going on the break. And John Wall and Russell Westbrook are really similar players. And one of the things that I really like about the way that the Thunder play in transition is that basically the fact that Russell Westbrook is averaging a triple-double is not an accident. Basically, you'll see Enes Kanter or you'll see Steven Adams. They typically play, the Thunder, I mean, typically play two bigs at any given time. That includes Joffrey Lavernier, you know, your draft pick this year, Domantas Sabonis. For the most part, you have this 4-5 rotation that is a lot bigger than most teams in the league, and you box out the bigs and then let Russell Westbrook grab the defensive rebound and push the break. And that's sort of an optimized version of what they used to do on the Wizards, where, you know, they box out with Gortat and Nene and then allow John Wall to get the break. It's like, you don't even have to make that outlet pass. You don't even have to wait for, okay, Nene gets the rebound and it's like, where's John Wall? Okay, John Wall needs to get open. It's like Russell gets that rebound and just like, it's all the way down the court. And in transition off of Russell Westbrook rebounds, you know, you guys score on like 65% of possessions.
It's definitely a strategy that the Thunder have implemented. I mean, their biggest strength is the bigs, right? I mean, besides Russell Westbrook, the biggest strength on the roster is their size and their strength inside. And so when you have guys that have the ability to box out and don't care about their rebounding numbers, and you can let Russ come in there, fly in there, get a rebound, and push the ball up the court, and you have all that athleticism out on the break, you gotta utilize it. That's kind of what they do.
So, you know, looking outside of Russell Westbrook, though, you know, you guys do have some talent that I think has that, you know, again, Billy Donovan's done such a wonderful job utilizing. So one of the new additions, of course, Victor Oladipo. Actually, I was going to presume that Victor Oladipo, you guys would think, is the number two. But who do you guys think is, you know, the second most important player on the Thunder team?
So we've talked about this quite a bit on the pod. Before the season started, I think probably most Thunder fans would have, or at least I did, would have thought that Steven Adams was going to be the second best player on this roster, not only because we thought he would improve offensively, but he's really just the defensive anchor, especially with, you know, Serge leaving. They needed to be able to sort of protect the rim. And so I think before the season, it was Steven Adams, and then Steven sort of struggled through the beginning of the season, so it looked like
they
needed Vic's scoring, which they were getting.
We expected a lot out of Adams, too, in the beginning, too.
Yeah, and so we also expected a lot out of Oladipo. We thought he would be able to sort of be that run-the-bench unit, get other guys involved, and that wasn't exactly what we were seeing. He was more of a spot-up shooter, and so I think through the first part of the season, it was really Vic was probably the second best Thunder player going, but now I think you're seeing the value of Steven Adams recently.
Yeah, he's been playing off the charts of late. I mean, he's starting to really figure it out defensively. He has such a huge responsibility on the defensive end, just guarding the paint, and then offensively they go to him in the post to start every single game.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, just when he was out those three games.
Two and a half.
So, yeah, when he was out those games, just the massive lack of defense we had was...
And it's just the layup after layup. Yeah.
He didn't stop anyone.
So. Right.
Well, so I think I've seen a lot of improvement on Enes Kanter on the defensive end.
He's hit and miss. You know, like, I'm not ready to go and say that he's a good defender by any means. But he has... I mean, he can hold his own at times. It's just when the Thunder are playing a team that moves well and moves without the ball well and has a lot of shooting and they stretch the floor with bigs, there are times when he's a little unplayable. But he's making strides, so he can body up with a big guy that, you know, plays similar to himself. But
like LaMarcus aside from last that, year in the playoffs.
Exactly. Like you saw in the San Antonio series last year. That's where Cantor became so playable because he could match up with those guys and you could play him 30 minutes.
Yeah, and then there's some games like whenever we saw in the Western Conference Finals last year where he was against the Warriors. I mean, he was almost unplayable for most of that series.
No one to guard. He has no one to guard.
Yeah. But also, we saw recently with Adams out, we expected sort of Cantor to step up, but it's a completely different role, and it's such a small sample size that I don't know what we could realistically expect to see from him, but I definitely do think he has gotten better on defense this season.
Yeah, and, you know, I have a lot more optimism about Enes Kanter in his career than I do about Steven Adams, which is a really rare opinion. You know, you don't talk to a lot of people who feel that way. I just feel like Enes Kanter has this really good touch and also has a similar like intimidation factor at the rim. And I think that ultimately is going to be able to translate once he gets the positional stuff down. Because Enes Kanter, I think, is every bit of the athlete that Steven Adams is, except, you know, minus the height. It's just, you know, Enes Kanter just really does not know how to play good defense. And I feel like every improvement that he makes, it's you get closer to being able to play Enes Kanter straight at the center. So, I mean, if I was running the Thunder, I would actually be looking to capitalize on the reputation that Steven Adams has. If I decided that I had to move one of the two guys, because I think I would get more for Steven Adams, but I'm actually more intrigued by Enes Kanter personally.
I think you just can't bank on Enes Kanter becoming what Steven Adams is on the defensive end, because that's what the Thunder needs so badly. I mean, Kanter's great on offense. He's a great offensive player, but he's almost equally bad defensively. And so he becomes a player where, if you're watching on the offensive end, you're like, oh my God, this guy's killing it. And you might watch on the defensive end, you're like, oh my God, this guy's giving up point after point after point. And so with Adams, you just have a consistent, solid player. And I think that's why Donovan likes to use Kanter off the bench, because he likes to exploit those backup bigs. And I mean, it's just, you see them go to Kanter possession after possession after possession offensively, because it really balances out his poor defense.
Sure. The only reason to have him out.
Yeah, and his plus minus on the year is just under a plus one. And I think that's what you're talking about, Brandon. Mm-hmm. Is that he's really good offensively. He's actually probably the best offensive weapon that they have, obviously coming
off the bench.
Yeah. And so, I mean, but he's just not been consistent enough on defense.
But since it's became the New Year's 2017, he's been a new player. You're seeing him pass out of the post a little better.
Well, the Thunder are making a more of an effort, to get him involved.
Sure.
Yeah, he has been passing really well out of the post, which is, that's the thing, that's my thing with Enes Kanter, is that, you know, people always talk about his per 36 numbers and then want to say, okay, well, he's doing it against bench centers. His per 36 is, by the way, he gets, you know, about 25 points a game, about 12 rebounds, a couple of assists. And he does it remarkably efficiently, except for three. He just has not been hitting threes this year, which, you know, whatever. But my thinking with Enes Kanter, do you guys remember down the stretch in, I think it was 13-14 when Kevin Durant was out? You know, they were, I think, they got 48 wins that season, but barely missed the playoffs to the Pelicans. And they were able to get all the way to 48 wins basically without Kevin Durant by just running pick and rolls between Kanter and Russell Westbrook. And it was like unstoppable basically.
Well, they had Durant for 27 games that year. It was a 2014-15 season. And Kanter, he's far and away a better player today than he was that year.
Is he the second best pure big man in the league?
I don't know. I mean, I'd have to see a list, you know. Like he's a great offensive player, but he's more of the, like, you got to get, he needs the ball. He needs to be able to score. He's not going to make plays for your team like a Marc Gasol can. You can't hit him in the post and have him just, I mean, yeah, his passing's getting better, but I mean, you can't get it twisted. He's still not a good passer, you know. Oh, yeah, not even close to Boogie. I mean, there's no comparison there. So I don't know.
Well,
I need
right,
a list
so Boogie
of
would be number one.
Yeah, sure.
And I mean, like, offensively, I think... Joel Embiid. Whoa. I mean, in terms of, like, back-to-the-basket stuff and, you know, post-game and just the ability to create from... you know, really close, create a shot when it maybe isn't there. I mean, Enes Kanter just has all of these really creative post moves, and I feel like it's a really interesting aspect to his game. And also, I was going to say, you know, there is the idea that he can't score without the basketball in his hand, but, I mean, that's sort of the point of a pick-and-roll center, right, is that you create all this gravity when you're going down the lane.
Sure, but the thing is Adams is a better pick and roll center than Ennis is because he presents more options. You can throw it over the top to Adams, and you can't really do that with Ennis.
Well, yeah, and this is a good time to transition into why I was so wrong about the Thunder. Steven Adams has been, especially for the second half of the season, I mean, I think he's got this, like, 10-foot righty hook that – you guys were saying they go to it basically the first play of the game, every game. That's not uncommon. But, I mean, Steven Adams is one of the more efficient players in the league offensively. And to a certain extent now, he can create his shot just by muscling it in, which is something I think he has not been able to do for the entirety of his career up to this point.
Yeah, he's definitely made strides offensively this offseason. It was something that you couldn't really count on before this season. And it was what we talked about this offseason, was that was what he really needed to work on, was being able to throw it to him down low and be able to get some points out of it, because really that was only what Kanter could do. That was Adams. That wasn't what he was good at.
You could throw it up to Adams for a dunk, and that was about it.
And just the improvement, like you talked about, has been really great to see, because that's what the Thunder want to do since, you know, the Thunder have, with this roster, what we've seen is that they try and get, like, whenever Serge Ibaka was here, they try to get Serge going early. They like to get the bigs going early because Russ is always going to be able to score whenever he wants to.
Right. And it's not just that right-handed hook either. I mean, you're seeing some left-handed hooks. He's got that flip shot in the lane that he likes, where he can shoot it over the top of guys, where he doesn't have to challenge them at the rim. He's improved drastically at the free throw line, which he draws contact a lot because he's so big and he gets offensive rebounds. And I mean, he's using ball fakes. He finishes some nice plays. And like Chris said, I mean, I think he's shooting, what is he shooting from the field? He's shooting 59% from the field, which is one of the best marks in the league.
Right, right. No, it's been really impressive. And I mean, there's the two teams I got the most wrong this season, going into the season. I thought the Thunder were going to be really bad, and I thought that the Timberwolves were going to get like 45-50 wins. So, you know, it's the Thunder to me are one of the most fun teams to watch because they're like showing me new stuff. Like I just think that Billy Donovan is just so, so ingenious. And, you know, a big part of that too is of course Russell Westbrook's creation. But you said that, you know, they were using Victor Oladipo as sort of a spot up shooter, and he was hitting really, really well at first, but he's never been a spot up shooter. I mean, how do you feel about the way that Victor Oladipo's role has evolved so far this season? And do you feel like he's being utilized correctly? And I mean, how optimistic are you about him and his long-term future with the team?
I mean, I think we all were talking quite a bit this season about how we wanted him to get more touches and do a little bit more offensively, driving and finishing at the rim, which he hasn't been very good at this season so far. But last night, they gave him the ball in the fourth quarter and kind of let him run with it, and he kind of got us back in the game. Like, we were kind of out of it for a minute, and he just kept hitting those mid-range shots that he's been incredible.
He's money in the mid-range. I mean, they got him curling around screens, and I don't think any one of us saw him as a spot-up shooter coming to the Thunder before the season.
No.
That's exactly what he's turned into.
Well, yeah, and his numbers are up, too. I mean, his three-point attempts this season are higher than any of his previous three seasons. He's shooting at just about 38% from three.
It's a good mark when you're shooting six a game, you know?
Right.
And so, yeah, you're right. And I think we would, I think every Thunder fan anyone watching the Thunder would like to see the ball in his hands, would like to see him be allowed to try to create for offense more often. But, you know, I mean, there's no doubt that you're not going to be as good with him, running the pick and roll as you are with Russell Westbrook running the pick and roll. But I think if you have him in your plans moving forward as a team, which obviously I think they do, they just signed him an extension this year, 4 years, $80 million. I think he needs those opportunities because really that's where he struggles, getting to the rim, finishing at the rim, and drawing fouls. But at the same time, maybe this is just who he feels comfortable being, spotting up, knocking down shots. Maybe he's a glorified role player.
The roster has changed, especially his role with that second unit with Cameron Payne coming back as well, who should make it easier on Vic because he'll be able to run that second unit.
As someone who wears glasses, I know that glasses can really change the way that you look and feel. With a huge selection of over 2,500 styles, GlassesUSA.com is the best way to get your best look, and that's 100% guaranteed. When you purchase eyeglasses online with GlassesUSA.com, you have an even wider range of choices than if you go to an eyeglasses shop. The pair of glasses I'm actually wearing in my logo, the Cedric Black pair, you can look them up on glassesusa.com. You can actually try them on. They have a virtual mirror that lets you try on glasses. You know, once you make an account, you can import a picture of yourself from Facebook or from your computer. It was as easy as buying glasses could be. If you wear glasses and you want to support the network, what you need to do is go use the promo code Almighty at checkout. Not only do you support the Almighty Baller Podcast Network and my podcast, Almighty Ball and NBA Show, you get 55% off of your first purchase at glassesusa.com. So again, that promo code is Almighty, A-L-M-I-G-H-T-Y. My glassesusa.com glasses are actually the best pair of glasses I own. And Victoria, I wear GlassesUSA.com glasses all the time, right? I have other pairs, but I choose to use these ones, right? I'm not sure if you heard that, but... yeah, how handsome am I? She says extremely handsome, so definitely go check them out. Don't forget to use that promo code at checkout, Almighty, to get 55% off your first purchase at GlassesUSA.com. Yeah, it is an interesting idea to have him run the second unit, especially because I think that the Thunder's depth has been sort of hit and miss, except for Kyle Singler, who has been miss only, just missing, which is...
Well, I think Vic running the second unit was the initial plans when they traded for him, because Kevin Durant was still on the team at that time.
Yeah, it's interesting. Oladipo has done a really good job of, you know, playing a little bit like JJ Redick, or at least in that role of just coming off screens all the time. And it makes sense if you're going to play a too big lineup, because now you have two people who can set off-ball screens, and also Andre Roberson sets like a real screen. It's impressive. I love Andre Roberson. But you know, when you have these two guys on the court, Westbrook and Oladipo, who are nine times out of ten, the more athletic player than the person who they're playing opposite, their defender just won't keep up. If you've got like Adams' huge body setting a pick, and then at the same time, you've got another 7-footer setting a pick somewhere else, it's like, you know, you can create separation almost all the time. And it's like people thought that their spacing was going to be bad, which in a sense it is, but they're just using this really well-run offense to execute plans that do get them open. Because when Oladipo like comes off of a canter screen, he's open.
Yeah, I mean, I think the entire Thunder roster is built around athleticism and size. That's kind of what Presti's always valued in the past. And I think it can be frustrating to Thunder fans that the lack of shooting on the roster, which is understandable, but also understandable that they're the third youngest roster in the league. And so maybe Presti sees them as, you know, they'll get better shooting the ball. And honestly, like we were talking about Oladipo shooting the ball better than we thought he would shoot the ball. Russ is honestly shooting the three better than, I mean, he's 33%, so it's still not great, but he's like the second best 3-point shooter on the team, at least the one that you can trust. Yeah, I mean, Abrines has had his moments, and but Moro hasn't been anything special. But yeah, I mean, it's just going to be growing pains for this team. They're not going to be world beaters right now, and they're not going to be world beaters next year with this roster. But they just kind of got to stick with it, and I think that they got a nice little core talent assembled.
Trust the process.
Yeah, we're the new process.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Everyone wants to be the process. Yeah.
It's hot right now.
God. How committed do you think the Thunder are to Andre Roberson?
That's hard to say. That's really hard to say. Yeah, I mean,
they offered him. I mean, I don't know how. I think it really depends on how much Roberson thinks his value is, because we saw that he could have signed the extension. He didn't. And so we'll see what happens this offseason.
I think they offered him $12 million a year, and I think that his agent and Roberson wanted 15, and the Thunder weren't willing to go that far, which I kind of side with the Thunder in this. I love Andre Roberson. I think he's one of the top five perimeter defenders in the entire league. I honestly don't even think it's debatable. But for this team, I'm not sure his value is as high as it would be for maybe a contender or – you know, someone that can make up his lack of offense. He's got probably the worst jump shot in the NBA.
Andre Roberson?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, it's really bad.
Understatement.
Well, so, and I, you know, honestly, I think that the reason why they went out and got Jeremy Grant is to potentially play the three. I feel like Andre Roberson might end up getting moved here soon, because while I agree with you that he is, I think he's a top five perimeter defender too. And I think that perimeter defense is more important than people realize as far as like constructing a good roster to stop people from taking effective shots. So I think Andre Roberson is really valuable to the Thunder in that regard. And, you know, that's why he plays 30 plus minutes a game, even though he can't shoot at all anywhere. So I guess my question to you is, if you think that Jeremy Grant ended up playing the three, or if you feel like Andre Roberson couldn't be traded for someone who could maybe, you know, replace a little bit of what Andre Roberson has defensively, do you think that the Thunder's defense would collapse? Do you think that, like, that would be a real problem if you guys didn't have him?
Yeah, I think it would. There would be a big issue, because even if you bring in Grant, as you know, as sort of long as he is, and as good as he is defensively, it's a big drop off from what we get from Roberson, who just completely can lock down the best perimeter player that the other team has. I mean, we've seen it all. You can go look at Harden's numbers from this season.
Yeah, three games.
Incredible this season, but whenever he's played the Thunder, he's been really bad because of Roberson. And so I do think you're probably right that Roberson's a piece that the Thunder are going to probably shop around, because he didn't sign the extension, and there's some uncertainty there that they could, you know, he could be gone. And so why not, if somebody's calling to sort of get a piece from the Thunder, I think that's a piece that the Thunder would be willing to give away.
You got to get something for him if he's not going to end up coming back for the amount that he wanted.
The thing is, though, about Roberson is that he is a restricted free agent. And yeah, with a player like him, it's hard. He's so hard to guess his value. What would his value be on a free agent market? You know, how much are people actually willing to give a guy that is just a defensive one-on-one stopper?
Well, we saw that with Cantor, right? Who's offensively.
But I think that's a little different.
Like,
yeah, I would agree.
Maybe not GMs as much, hopefully.
So I think Andre Roberson, if you're saying that he's sort of a one-on-one defensive stopper, I think that's undervaluing what he does defensively. You know, it's like there's a lot of aspects of defense. Like, it's how well are you going to fight over screens? Andre Roberson's going to fight over screens really well. How are you going to do in isolation situations? Andre Roberson does that really well. Can you, like, cheat off your man, but also not let your man, if you're covering threes, which a lot of the time he is, are you just going to, like, let him get out to the three-point line and hit a shot on you? And how well are you going to make decisions? Maybe the person taking that three-point shot, it's okay for him to go out and take that. I think that you guys would be I'm worried that you guys would be really bad defensively. Right now you're 11th in the league, and I thought you guys would be a lot worse. And I think that Andre Roberson is a big part of that.
He's definitely a big part of it, but I will say that I think that, I mean, a big thing of what the Thunder do is it's a team defense philosophy. I mean, it's hard to, when you look at good defensive teams, you can't really look at one player and say that he's why they're really great defensively. Maybe sometimes when it's a center, a rim protector, something like that. Yes, that if they lost Roberson, they're going to fall off defensively a little bit. No doubt about it. And I think when you talked about Jeremy Grant, him coming in maybe as insurance for Roberson, I think there's something to that. But at the same time, if you've been watching Grant this year, I think he's better at the four. I mean, I don't think that he plays that small forward position as effectively as he can at the power forward, mostly because his primary asset defensively is blocking shots. It's his athleticism. It's how he can challenge shots from the weak side. It's not sticking with the guy one-on-one because he lacks strength.
He lacks size.
Well, but I think that that's what Andre Roberson does. I think that he's a great weak side defender. That was sort of the point I was making is I think that he's their best team defender.
He probably is. But he's got
a block and a steal a game, and a lot of that is off of help, which you're going to need if Russell Westbrook is doing everything for your team. He's going to need a lot of help. And Andre Roberson, I think, does that extraordinarily well.
He definitely takes pressure off of Russ because defensively we see too many times with Russ where he sort of doesn't seem to have the effort defensively, and Roberson definitely picks up that slack.
I mean, Roberson's a confident defender. He's, like I said earlier, he's one of the best in the league, so there's nothing to dog on him defensively about it. But he is the type of defender, in my mind, where, you know, you say, hey, go lock this guy down. Don't let him out of your sights and shut him down. And he's like, okay, got it. Yeah. And then he succeeds more often than he doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess I just think that, you know, like you said, the Thunder play team defense mostly. You know, there's a lot of calling on switches and stuff. You're not really fully utilizing your length and height if you're not sort of willing to switch defensively a little bit, or, you know, have guys cheat off of their man a little bit and shoot for passing lanes and stuff. And, you know, I think if there is a guy who you need to lock down, Andre Roberson's that guy. But a lot of the time I see him doing a little bit of roaming. And the reason why I would think that a big part of the reason why I think Jeremy Grant could maybe replace that at the three position is just because I think that you guys, I would think that you would want to continue to have that aspect of your offense in the fast break where the bigs block everyone out, and Jeremy Grant is a pretty poor rebounder. So I'm not sure I want him trying to get the rebound and then, or trying to box out guys so that Russell Westbrook can cut on the break. And I think you guys struggle a little bit to create offense in the half court.
Yeah, there's no doubt they struggle to create offense in the half court. And a big part of that is just the spacing alone. I mean, it's that you can pack the paint because you have to worry about Russell Westbrook. So it's basically, you know, one guy guarding Russ one-on-one and then four others guarding him with one eye and guarding their man with the other eye, but basically less aware to that man than they are Russell Westbrook. And so it's harder in the half court for this team. They don't have shooting. Yeah.
It's completely sagged off of him.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the downfall with Andre Roberson. I mean, that's where he's going to hurt you. And sometimes, you know, when you play a team like, say you're playing Memphis and they start Tony Allen and they don't really have anyone for him to guard, you know, sometimes that's when sometimes you can look and be like, why is he on the court? Right. He has no business on the court right now because they're not even guarding him and he has no one to guard because you don't need him.
Well, but Tony Allen's first team all NBA defense though.
Yeah, but he can't play defense on offense, so.
That's a good point. Well, no, he can. He's basically defending himself out there.
Yeah, pretty. He's really good at it.
So, you know, the trade deadline is coming up, and that's something that I've talked about in a lot of podcasts recently. I know you don't know that because you've never listened to my, that is something that I've touched on a few times. But, I mean, who do you guys have your eyes on now that I think probably the most obvious get for you guys is down with a really sad, I think, Achilles tear.
LeBron James.
Yeah, Rudy Gay went down with the Achilles, ruptured his Achilles, and I think everyone, there were some rumors out there that the Thunder were targeting Gay, and but I think if you ask around town here, you know, the name you're going to hear a lot of is Wilson Chandler. Presti's always been fond of Wilson Chandler. There's been reports in the past years that Presti's targeted Wilson Chandler, but he's always hurt. You know, Gallinari, another Nuggets player, is a guy that people mention a lot. Terrence Ross. It's always that small forward position. But if we know one thing about Presti, it's that he's unpredictable. I mean, you're not going to see him trade for any of these people. I just don't think so. It's going to be something random. Like when they traded for Enes Kanter, you know, he wanted Brook Lopez. That's who he was going after, Brook Lopez.
Yeah, that deal was almost done.
It was like
all of a sudden it switched.
Right. Last second, right before the trade deadline, like literally minutes before the trade deadline. Oh, Enes Kanter is going to Oklahoma City. I mean, you just never know. So it's really hard to speculate trades for this team. I mean, the holes are obvious, mostly the small forward position and then a little bit of the power forward position, but their roster's so front court heavy.
Yeah, Brandon's been talking about a blockbuster trade for this team all season, and we've even heard, I mean, there's been like Jimmy Butler talk, mm-hmm. that, you know, the Bulls
Paul shut
that
down. Thing,
and that's a big,
kind of not shopping him anymore, apparently.
That's a big reason why Presti's, you know, just basically hoarded all these assets, all these young assets, is because he wants to put himself in a position where if the opportunity comes where a superstar is on the block and he can throw a bunch of assets that aren't picks at that team, that's what he wants to do.
Yeah, and all it takes is, you know, if Gar Foreman falls in love with a couple of young guys and thinks that they're undervalued and that they've shown flashes of potential, then maybe he does that. You know, that's basically what happened with Serge Ibaka, although he's not a young guy, right? Like, the Magic.
No one knows his age. Literally no one knows his age.
Except for him.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, actually, maybe, I don't know.
Napa Know How.
The Napa guy knows not to judge a man by his car's multicolored paint job or absence of modern gadgetry. Who cares if it's technically old enough to vote and the windows are powered by the strength of your left arm? Your monthly payment is zero, and it'll stay that way. Because with over 500,000 parts and a little Napa know-how, you can keep anything on the road. She may not be pretty, but she's all yours. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
But, you know, I do definitely get that that philosophy in terms of just try to get guys that play certain roles. But, you know, it's interesting. I think Gallinari is a really interesting fit, especially because he sort of struggled this year. Because, you know, you talk about the Thunder roster and you talk about the roles that they need to fill and the holes that they need to fill. There's like a big Kevin Durant shaped hole in the Thunder, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's no point in going, in my mind. I mean, a lot of people would disagree with me, but I don't see a point in going after the Wilson Chandlers, the Gallinaris, the guys that are good players, but they're not going to put you as a contender or anything. They're not making you a contender. So what's the point of giving up young assets for these guys just so it might get you one or two seeds better in the playoff hunt?
Well, I would think that would be really important to the Thunder.
I just don't think so. I mean, I think that down the road, they want to compete for championships, and they're not going to go get a guy that is, you know, he's injured a lot or whatever the case. They're not going to just get rid of their assets for a guy that's never going to push them over the top.
No, and the biggest part, we talked about, this is the third youngest team in the NBA. Mm-hmm. I don't think you're giving that up for a small piece that maybe gives you, you know, it pushes you a little bit better for a first round win.
Yeah.
You know, and then you don't really have a chance.
You get swept by Golden State.
this entire season, before the season started, as soon as KD went out, as soon as he left, our biggest thing was we need to realize that we don't have championship aspirations this season. Like, it's just, realistically, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, and it is kind of weird for the city because we suddenly, a year or two after we got a team, we were suddenly incredible.
Yeah,
and so now we're like, oh, so we're just always this good.
We're so spoiled.
And so now we have to kind of take a step back and look at it and realize that, oh, you kind of have to wait a little while. This is different than
so I haven't seen that from the Thunder organization. One of the things that Kevin Durant said about like why he left is, you know, I wanted to win a championship, but they kept getting younger and younger. And typically what that means is, you know, they weren't selling their future. They weren't willing to go into the tax, you know, famously with Russell or with James Harden, which was a terrible move. But, you know, they were making sure that they can have sustained success as opposed to going all in. But going all in is, you know, I mean, it they would definitely improve, you know, or they definitely would have improved if they had gone all in on their championship core, but they never did. So it's my impression that the Thunder look more at the Grizzlies model and want to just be able to continue being good, or maybe a little bit like the Spurs model, right? Where you just continue to be good rather than, you know, like going all in at one time. Like, so right now, I mean, the Golden State Warriors or the Cavs are a better example. The Cavs just traded a pick that would have been nice to have for Kyle Korver, and it's going to make them a lot better now, but it's not going to be great down the line.
Well, I think that's the point we're making.
We don't see the point in sacrificing our young talent that's going to continue to grow and get better to get somebody that's just going to come over and be injured.
And that type of team to me, right, would make the move for Gallinari, because I think it could absolutely. I mean, Gallinari is a really, really good player. And if Presti thinks that he is underperforming what he could if he was on the Thunder roster, which I am inclined to agree with him, then it could be the difference between 45 wins and like 51, 52 wins. And, you know, I think if he really, really wanted a championship, then he would have acted differently in the past. I think he just wants to be good.
I think he wants to keep doing what he's always been doing. He wants to compete for championships while not sacrificing the future. And so he's looking for potential superstars that he might be able to get. Gallinari is not a potential superstar. Gallinari's played over 50 games twice in his career, and you know, two seasons in his career. So he's not going to do it for the Thunder. So I don't think you're going to see Presti give up multiple assets for a guy like that. Now, he will give up multiple assets for a guy that he sees superstar potential for. And because that's kind of what I was saying, this whole hoarding assets process, kind of philosophy that he's been doing. Not only so you might be able to get rid of some of these assets for a guy in return, and you still have some left over. And so that's kind of what he's been doing this whole time.
Okay. And that's what you guys want. You mentioned that you were sort of spoiled Thunder fans. As Thunder fans, the feeling around other Thunder fans that you know and around the city is your expectation is that you want to compete for a championship and not just be good.
Well, no, not necessarily. I mean, it's just about what the end goal is. Like, what are you working towards? Are you working towards being a 50-win team every single year without ever realistically having a chance to compete for a championship? Or are you working towards being a team that has a chance to compete for a championship but also has a bright future?
Yeah, and I think a thing to keep in mind is, like we talked about earlier, this team has been built for championships up to this point, because they've been in the running every year for the last...
I mean, if you take Russell Westbrook off this team right now, it's an awful team.
But so they have to retool kind of around him now. So that's kind of what the goal is, I think, moving forward, is how do we win a championship with Russ and focus this team around him?
And they're totally preparing for, you know, if the day comes where Russ doesn't want to be a part of this anymore, and he says, you know, I want to compete for championships now rather than years down the road. That's what Presti is preparing for both sides of that.
Yeah, because he doesn't want to be a
10-win. Yeah, so I guess that's where we can end this, is Russell Westbrook and his future with the Thunder. So he re-signed an extension that kept him in town for another year, and especially with the way that the CBA ended, I'm skeptical about his willingness at 31, 32 years old to say, no thanks, I'm not going to take a $200 million contract. Are you guys... Do you agree with that, you know, if the day comes that he wants to sign a five-year contract or a new five-year contract for, you know, $35, $40 million, do you think that the Thunder are going to do that?
I absolutely think that the Thunder will do that. And the scary part is that what we just saw with Kevin Durant. I mean, he could have re-upped for another year to get max money the following season, and he didn't. And I think that's part of what we were talking about as well, is Russ may just decide that he wants out as well, and he wants to take an easier path. Maybe he's not interested in trying to retool a little bit for a couple of years. And so that's the biggest concern for Thunder fans,
yeah,
is what's going to happen with Russ.
And don't you think it's kind of it's number one on the organization's plans to make Russ happy, kind of,
yeah,
give him something that's going to make him happy. Right now, I think he understands where the team's at. I don't think Russ is upset. I don't think he's struggling to understand what's going on.
I think he's happier than he's ever been.
Maybe. I think he likes the direction right now. But, you know, say, if the Thunder are in this exact same position next year, you know, things might start to pile up a little bit. And he's like, okay, where are we actually going? What's happening? So I think it's so hard to say, but I guarantee you Oklahoma City will do whatever it takes to keep Russell Westbrook in Oklahoma City.
Okay.
He's a god here.
All right. So let's assume that they do put a 5-year contract in front of him and he signs it. How do you guys feel about that?
Terrific.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's all I have to say about it, really.
So, how concerned are you guys about the possibility of him falling off?
You mean just like athletically, like kind of what he's gifted with?
Yeah, because, I mean, he's 28, and if he signs a 5-year contract at the end of next year, he'll be signing a 5-year contract. And, you know, he'll be 34, 35 during the last 2 years of that, making 40, 45 million.
He's also a Terminator, though. So.
That's true. No, I think there's definitely some concern there, though. I mean, he gets by on a lot of his athleticism. He's the most athletic player in the league, maybe in league history, is the things he can do. So when that starts to go, you know, what's his game going to look like?
Yeah.
And I think that what he's kind of started to work on is his post game a little bit, his little turnaround jumpers in the post, kind of. You know, not unlike how Jordan switched his game up to. I'm not saying Russell Westbrook's Michael Jordan.
But, I just Googled Michael Jordan.
But just like in the same type of, manner where he takes him down the post, a little turnaround jumper, because he's always going to be able to jump. No one's going to block his shot. I mean, he might not be able to get up and down the court as well as he did. But, you know, he's learning to play with pace. He's learning to play in the pick and roll where he makes the right pass. And so while there's concern there, I don't think – I'm too worried about it.
Well, we're not talking about a guy who's been injury-free his whole career either.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's dealt with some injuries.
He had 3 surgeries and got better.
In a year.
Yeah, and so there's definitely a little bit of concern there, but with what we're seeing, you have to ride it out and just, you
risk,
hope for the best.
It's a risk you're willing to take.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and you know, Michael Jordan, I think, is a interesting comparison just because of, I mean, being a supreme athlete who just is not a great shooter, but still shoot, you know, who I think, you know, maybe there is a little bit of surprise from, from everyone, you know, watching it. And it's why, you know, a lot of people think he's the best player ever. But I mean, my thinking is, you know, when Michael Jordan was 31, he was getting 27 points a game. And his 3-point percentage was the highest in his career, 30.4 points a game, and then 29.6 the year after, 28.7 the year after. And of course, they had back-to-back-to-back championships then. But Michael Jordan was 32, 33, 34, right? And that's the age that Russell Westbrook would be. So if Russell Westbrook is this titanium man, if he's, you know, just like a tremendous athlete and he can improve on things like his post play and on his shooting, then, I mean, it's been done before by a guy. It's like, well, you're comparing him to one of the best ever, Michael Jordan, but why can't Russ be like that? You know, I mean, Russell Westbrook's one of the best ever too.
Yeah, I think there's no doubt that, I mean, his shooting can only improve. Yeah, I mean, it's improved every single year he's been in the league. I know, like, not his field goal percentage, but him shooting
this year
the ball.
Has. It's been amazing.
And I think his intelligence is kind of underrated as a player because he's so wild and just off, like, goes off the rails a little. And he's a really smart player.
And to be honest,
he's just going to continue to grow and he's going to figure out, oh, I need to maybe figure out how to shoot a little better and extend my game a little.
And I think he's a better player than anyone 4 or 5 years ago would have ever guessed he was going to be. So, I think that you can put your faith into him still being a great player when he's 33 years old and feel pretty good about it.
Well, and also, I think we're talking about shot selection here as well.
Yep.
I mean, he's not a good three-point shooter.
Yeah.
But a pull-up mid-range jumper, he is so good at. And he's worked, like we said, he's working on the post game. And so, yeah, I think his game would have to evolve. Like, every player, age catches up to him.
And honestly, his athleticism dwindling as he gets older might do him some might do him some favors on offense, you know, at times.
Yeah, yeah, no, I agree. I think this year has been has really sold me on a lot of things with the Thunder and with Russell Westbrook as possibilities that I just it's not that I was dismissing them before, because I mean Russell Westbrook is, you know, the Terminator, like you guys said, but I just thought that it was, you know, unlikely enough that they would be able to put together a decent team on the court, but they've done that. And I thought that Russell Westbrook, you know, with decreased spacing would shoot worse, but he shot better. And I thought that, you know, he would be not able to play like 40 minutes a game and, well, 36 minutes a game, but he's played pretty much every game without his body breaking down, which it hasn't. So, I mean, maybe it was just because of where I started out at the start of the season, but I'm really happy with where the Thunder are, considering the fact that they just basically got socked in the face when Kevin Durant left.
So that's interesting. Chris, where did you predict them to sort of finish this season at before the season
started? I thought they were going to win like 25 games.
Oh, wow. What? See, I had him around 43, which everyone pretty much thought was low. But I think, honestly, it's a testament to the greatness of Russell Westbrook. I mean, he's carrying this team on his shoulders. And, you know, you see the guys around him that are improving every single game, namely Steven Adams, who he's got all-star potential in my mind. I think maybe one year down the road, I don't think he's going to be a perennial all-star or anything, but he might make one year, you know? I mean, there's so many good bigs in the league, but they have a really nice rapport. Andre Robertson, just what he does night in, night out. But Russell Westbrook, it's why he's a bona fide MVP candidate this year, even with the Thunder being the current sixth seed, you know, no matter what. It's just what he does every game for this team and how he wills them to victories is so impressive.
Would you guys pick him for MVP?
We had this conversation recently. It's good that you bring this up. And I don't think there's a concern now. I mean, they're a six seed now. There's no concern that the Thunder are going to miss the playoffs, right? I mean, barring a Russell Westbrook injury,
right,
the Thunder are going to make the playoffs. And so I would give it to Russ. If it ended today, I still think it's Russ's to lose.
And I think the game against Utah was honestly like a little iconic. I mean, that's an MVP performance right there. You missed 13 straight shots and you still hit the game-winning shot. I mean,
and it was sort of like that game six where Isaiah Thomas played with the twisted ankle, except he just kept getting like literally hit in the face. I mean, that was a rough game for him, you know.
Yeah, poked in the eye and then he still made the shot. I mean, yeah, it'd be hard to look at his numbers, averaging a triple double, first guy in 50 something years to do it and deny him as a playoff team, as the leader of that team, to deny him the MVP. I think that'll be hard for voters if he's averaging a triple-double at the end of the year.
Well, hey, guys, I really appreciate you coming on the show and talking about the Thunder with me. I'm glad to have you guys on the network representing the Thunder. Talk a little bit about your show. You know, everyone, introduce yourself again one more time and plug that Twitter handle. And you can find them and all of our other great shows at almightyballer.com. So take it away.
Yeah, so we're the Thunderheads. You can just find us on iTunes through the Almighty Baller Podcast Network, or you can search Thunderheads, whatever. It'll show up. Follow us on Twitter, at OKC Thunderheads. I'm Brandon. I'm here with Rob, the Dark and Stormy Jason Lewis. We really appreciate you having us on. It was a lot of fun talking Thunder with someone else for a change. So Thunder up.
All right, well, definitely, guys. No, it was great. It's great to talk to you guys, and I'll see you around, you know, when, I guess, Russell Westbrook wins MVP. We'll probably have to talk about that.
All right, thanks, Chris.
Napa Know How.
Napa
a guy knows not to judge a man by his car's multicolor paint job or absence of modern gadgetry. Who cares if it's technically old enough to vote and the windows are powered by the strength of your left arm? Your monthly payment is zero, and it'll stay that way. Because with over 500,000 parts and a little Napa know-how, you can keep anything on the road. She may not be pretty, but she's all yours. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how. Napa know-how.
A Napa guy knows more isn't always better, unless we're talking about full-size vans. These beasts do more than get you from A to B. They have so much space a man can live in it. With shag carpeting, waterbed, and a sweet lava lamp, these mobile abodes have all the comforts of home. With quality parts and plenty of Napa know-how, you can keep the original tiny house running longer, stronger. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
Everybody get up! Everybody get up! Everybody needs to understand that I'm more than simply a hype man for this rap group. Just like Geico is more than just a company that can save you money. Geico also has fast and friendly claim service, so they can help you when you need it most. And while I do love being a hype man, I also love reading for children's audiobooks. Like Little Bo Peep, she lost a sheep, and she don't know where to find them. Yo!
Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.